So, yeah, about the new discoveries that you're teasing, like, I'm just not going to ask anything. I'll just let you talk because this is all about you.
Sure. So, we've been in back in 2017, we conducted excavations in the Hill antechamber with the definitive with the idea of searching for clues to how Homo naledi utilized the system. As you know, when we announced the species in 2015, we not only did we announce this new species, which interestingly was probably one of the best received new species ever announced. I mean, there's been zero controversy about it being a legitimate new species. And while people may go, "Oh, there are plenty," there's almost no other species that there isn't some controversy about, to whether, you know, from Afarensis to Habilis to Erectus to even Sedevas. But Homo naledi, that hasn't happened because there's so much of it, I think. And you know, and I believe it has to do with our open access policies too, where you probably have downloaded and printed the Homo naledi pieces and can test our ideas immediately. But what was controversial was when we talked about deliberate body disposal. And we were very careful, and I coached my team deeply on the terminology that we would use and how we would say that it was a deliberate ritualized body disposal, but ritualized, and that means repeated, you know, that we were very careful about terms. And because we knew the idea that the small-brained hominid had performed an activity that until that moment was seen kind of as one of the defining behaviors of Homo sapiens, and not just of Homo sapiens, but of late Homo sapiens. You know, the oldest burials really don't push much beyond 70 or 80,000 years, you know, in any real sense of it. And even the idea that something as like us as Neanderthals buried its dead or performed rituals related to death, it's something that's been controversial even today. Not everyone accepts the evidence that there's mortuary practice with Neanderthals even. So we knew it was going to be a hard line, yet that's where the evidence kept pushing us. You know, repeatedly we were finding that you know, there was nothing else in the cave system. If this had been a human, an accumulation of humans, there'd be no doubt what it was. You know, there wouldn't have even the evidence that we presented would be far more than enough to talk about mortuary practices, largely because we have this bias that it is a human practice. So the evidentiary standard for humans doing it is very, very, very low. In our excavations in 2017, we worked in the Hill antechamber, and then we also worked in the Dinaledi chamber, attempting to see if we could find evidence of culture, fire. The idea being that the closer you were to the chute entrances, although I've told you in a previous interview that the chute isn't a chute, and that we need to get rid of that term, it's a labyrinth. But the idea was still there at that time that it was, and that's where the most likely evidence would be. Let's say someone dropped a tool or things like that. Well, what we began uncovering was fascinating. And I'm gonna take over the screen here, if you will. I'm going to host disabled participant sharing. You've disabled me.
Oh, I have to. Sorry, excuse me. I should be able to have it to you as well now. I think.
Okay, hold on. Ah, there we go. Yep,
Ah,
I got it.
perfect.
I got it.
So I will.
I'm taking over the show right now.
Perfect. You're
And
doing good.
this is a capture of your show. So
Yeah.
just to remind the audience, Homo naledi is not a human, at least not by my terms.
Yeah.
It's a very small-brained hominid with many primitive features. It does share some morphology with yeah. living humans, and it certainly has a very complex brain. One of my colleagues who studies it said it's the most complex surficial brain that we've seen outside of a human brain. Yeah. In that, but the rest of the anatomy is relatively primitive, and that is across the body plan, very ape-like shoulders, but it progressively becomes more human-like as you extend down towards his hands, but the hands are very curved with almost yeah. a superhuman thumb, a thumb that's in the percentiles of the longest human thumbs there are. Spine is small, but shares many Neanderthal features. Pelvis is yeah. primitive, and so are the proximal femur, but then it becomes more and more human-like as you move down to the feet, with the exception of Kirkus. Very mosaic, very strange, yeah. with a very low encephalization quotient, that is brain to body size. And that, of course, also has left people saying, well, this thing is not capable of complex. Some people doubted that it had fire. Some people doubted that it says there's no evidence of it using tools.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is, of course, due to this sort of image, which you've seen before, this sort of progression yeah. that we have. This is the way evolution worked, but this isn't the way evolution worked, clearly. No. This was a construct of what we wanted to see in this picture, and not only discoveries like Floresiensis, Lusiensis, Naledi are showing that this was not an inevitable march to a big brain, and even this was really a manufacture. If you actually plot the actual brain sizes, they're all over the place on this chart. It's not a smooth progression towards us. Unfortunately, archaeologists would parallel this with a sort of image of a progression of archaeology that increases in complexity right alongside this, and behavior, therefore, becomes yeah. ever increasingly thing. That's a story that we had rewritten. Well, we're about to rewrite that story. The other one was the myth of the idea that Homo sapiens were alone in Africa. That up until Homo naledi, any archaeologist would have told you that the story in Africa was the extinction of Erectus. That was probably sometime just after a million years or so, and the rise of first archaic Homo sapiens, whether yeah. you call them Homo rhodesiensis or anything else or whatever yeah. you wanted to call them, and then the emergence of modern humans and modern human behavior sometime after, say, 350, 250, 150,000 years, and the emergence of that infinite toolkit, artwork, symbolism, and all the things that we associate that, including burial of the dead, with yeah. the evidence for that really largely only being after 100,000 years in that. As I said, we had introduced the very controversial idea of deliberate body disposal, and this is kind of a fanciful drawing by a National Geographic artist.
I mean, I have used this one for my thumbnails on Homo naledi. So sorry.
Okay, but in it, you're illustrating the idea that this is a species. Notice that they're careful. There's no clothing. There's no tools in evidence. No, and they're kind of carrying this body in a procession when we're actually finding them very deep inside of these caves.
Yeah.
Just to familiarize everyone again before I show you what this next discovery is. This is the Dinaledi chamber.
Yeah.
And the Hill antechamber on the right, if you look on the left-hand image, you can see it's a long way back in the system. You're talking about 150 meters back in the system in a very remote area that we today move down through this chute labyrinth. Homo naledi probably had lots of possibilities,
yeah.
but they're all not easy. This place yeah. has been restricted from other animals and getting access to it. By the nature of practically only Homo naledi is found in there. We had begun to describe discoveries in strange situations, like the discovery of the Leti skull, which we announced 2 years ago in extremely remote passages, where, like this one, that are back beyond the Dinaledi system, those spaces are tiny. and difficult to get into. And there we found things like this remains of a face, if you will, of a child sitting on a limestone shelf with no bones of the body there, nothing else, very delicate bones and nothing else there. And we alluded at the time that we may be seeing more complex mortuary behavior or ritual behavior related with death, because that skull, that face didn't walk there on its own. And its body's not there. And if it had gone and crawled in there and died, you would likely find a different situation than what we were finding. And we alluded to that maybe there is more complex things. These are images which you'll see released shortly. This is a 4K rendition. So you're now journeying into the Dinaletti system. You've just come down the ladder. You're into this space. I draw your attention to this excavation here that you see here.
Yeah.
I'll be talking to this area in just a moment and the work that was going on here. And then you'll see this, you get an idea of the size of the Hill antechamber. It's a small space.
Yeah.
This is a doorway that leads to a passage between the Hill antechamber and the Dinaletti chamber. I bet you that you maybe were as surprised as I was, how that been in space, that this is a very different journey than perhaps had been described in the cartoon-like illustrations and drawings that we had.
This is not easy to get through, especially with a body of a deceased individual.
That's right. And into the Dinaletti chamber itself.
I just need to like remind myself that I'm just watching a screen. I'm not actually down there. I'm very claustrophobic.
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah.
These images you're seeing the first time we can actually journey into them. This was the original excavation over on the left. That's the sondage we did to go down 80 centimeters to try and find the floor. This is where those original fossils came from. And I'll draw your attention to this.
Yeah.
You notice there's clear earth here. You see this feature here.
Yeah.
With the and these are all bones.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, that's all bones.
And this is a circle that exceeds the bones that you're at. You're looking at a burial.
That was the thing that I was thinking about. Like, I have to look at a burial. That has to be someone.
That is a hole in the ground with a body in it, in a flex position. Like that. So that hole was dug here. The body was placed in a flex position and then it collapsed in on itself. There are the remains of a juvenile in the upper surfaces, we believe is coming from this burial.
Yeah.
Here. And it turns out that the original puzzle box, that dense area of bones, was just a series of overlapping burials. That we didn't recognize because we weren't looking for that. And only after we discovered, as we extended the excavations, did we find these very clear burials of individuals, spaces between them. And it, just like in a medieval cemetery where graves are dug into graves are dug into graves, that original one, because of its position, was where they had chosen to do multiple.
Graves.
So it wasn't a bone bed like we had originally described, but it was a series of discrete burials. That area I told you to pay attention to in the Hill antechamber during the excavation to see if we could find artifacts. We very quickly struck what was appearing to be highly degraded bone, which we took out in a plaster jacket. So we collected the entire thing and took it out and CT scanned it. And that's what you're seeing on the right.
Okay.
And what was in there is another burial. This is, it's very clear to see. You can see the base of the burial. It's horizontal within the slope. This is a debris cone. It comes out of a passage there, and it's been, a hole has been dug into it, and bodies have been placed in that hole. This is the scan. Here's the plaster jacket. This, I took this to Synchrotron, if you saw me tweeting on that, and we now have Synchrotron scanned it. But this is a medical CT. Here's the material inside of there. This is then the reconstruction of the material out of it. What you're looking at is the body of dominantly a child. It's probably about 13 years old. Here, you can see his articulated foot. He was in a flex, but he or she was in a flex position as well.
Yeah.
And very similar position to the other individual. And the head, which is right here, had collapsed in. Just to give you an idea of the quality
Viewers, real quick, because I am familiar with synchrotron because of my sister, and she's shown me a lot of things with it. But for the viewers, can you explain a little bit on what synchrotron is?
Synchrotron is an extremely powerful X-ray light source, the most powerful in the world. We use the European Synchrotron Radiation Facility in Grenoble, the ESRF, as it's known, and they've actually built a special gantry that can take extremely heavy objects and scan them down to the lowest micron levels. You've seen science applied that is the most extreme science humans have done to study the origins of humankind.
Yeah.
And so very exciting tool, of imaging tool that we use, very powerful, powerful imaging tool. So this is extremely exciting. What I'm showing you is a burial of a child, about 13 years old. There's actually four children in here. There is one main child, and then there appears to be two partial faces, very similar to Letty, that are either intrusive or were captured when they were digging the hole to put this child in and mixed in, or they were put in with this child. And then unseen on this is there are the bones of what appear to be a fetus or a very small child, a neonate that's buried right here, a body of one. You can't see that on this image. It's only visible on synchrotron image. So what I've just shown you are clear graves of a non-human species, likely dating to 230 to 330,000 years.
With small brains, like a species with small brains.
The size of a chimpanzee. So this is extraordinary. We're talking about a moment where we do that. I will draw your attention to something else.
Mm-hmm.
You may wonder what this orange object is.
It says rock. So
you see that those long bones right here that I'm illustrating with my cursor?
Yeah.
That's a hand.
Huh.
That's the child's hand. That's the only rock that's in this burial.
Hmm. That's reminiscent of like stone tools or something. Or am I just saying something stupid
that
right
is
now?
That is certainly a tool-shaped rock.
Yeah.
In the hand of a Homo naledi child.
That's incredible. This is
it does appear to have use wear and serrations, and you can see striations on the surface, and it appears to have a flake scar there on this side.
Yeah.
So that appears to be a tool-shaped rock in the hand of a Homo naledi child buried in the hill antechamber.
And as an amateur, I would be like 1 + 1 = 2. So it's a tool-shaped rock in the hand of an individual.
What we are announcing is that we have discovered non-human species burials.
Yeah.
In the Dinaliti chamber, which is a pretty big deal. And I think it's widespread. We believe the Lacetti chamber are burials as well.
Yeah.
But of a different kind. They're using those spaces differently. They're using alcoves and then burying the bodies.
Yeah.
The bodies have all appear to be in a flexed or fetal position. So they may have been bound when they were put in there, because it's very hard to keep a body in that that sort of position. But I think that finally we'll clear, we don't have to be as cautious as we once were.
Yeah.
On the idea that Homo naledi was extraordinarily complex and capable of performing not just rituals related to death, but I think it's fair to say mortuary and probably funerary practices. And for your audience who may go, oh, what's the big deal? It's a very big deal. This is the first time we've seen that level of complex behavior in a non-human.
Yeah.
It predates humans' use of this that we have in the archaeological.
And with record. Like, even for the viewers that indeed are like, what's the big deal? Even Neanderthal burials are often discarded as, oh, that's not a burial. They didn't do that. They couldn't have done that. So that's why this is such a massive and big deal.
It is a major moment in the history of archaeology and paleoanthropology.
Yeah. That's incredible. Like, I'm amazed by the images that I've just seen. Like, that's it. Honestly, it's incredible. Like, the fact that you found the fact that they did indeed purposefully bury them. But that rock, like, oh, I love stone tools. I'm such a nerd for this stuff. Like, everyone around me and my family and my friends are always like, why do you even like this? Like, I don't know. Like, my spare time is spent reading scientific papers. Like, I can't help it. I have to learn more. Yeah. So this is incredible.
There you go.
Thank you.
We're back with another discovery.
Yes.
And you've heard about burials. You've heard about the fire that we've announced and other discoveries related. And you can see that we're beginning to build a more complex picture of Homo naledi. What I'm going to do is move on to this latest discovery, which I think takes us to a new space. A new place in understanding. As your audience knows, I did manage to get into the Dinaledi chamber. And as soon as I was in the chamber, I began to make quite a lot of discoveries. The very first was the recognition that the chute wasn't a chute, it was a labyrinth system, that Homo naledi was likely coming in multiple ways. I was there because of the questions that had arisen around the burial paper that we were submitting and the idea that I needed answers that we couldn't sort, and also to seek evidence for myself. Almost immediately, upon getting in, as I was narrating the description, I described the hill burial chamber. And was examining utilization of the floor and such as that. And what I feel is evidence that Homo naledi was altering the space and manipulating the space. And I think that that's going to become clear over the next years, that we realized that Homo naledi was changing the space that they were in, very much in the way that we now recognize that Neanderthals were manipulating deep spaces. Homo naledi was altering these spaces. You've already seen the heart structure that is very clear, and I think that you're going to see other evidence. But as I was narrating in this, you have to remember, this is a very emotive moment for me. It was a big moment for me. I risked my life coming into this. I'd gone past spaces where I wasn't sure I could get out. I'm exploring a space that I thought I would never be in. And as I finished my description of the hill antechamber, I began to move towards that passageway, the passageway between the hill antechamber burial chamber and the Dinaledi chamber. And as I looked at that passageway, I couldn't shake from my mind that it looked like a doorway. That it has the feeling of a door or a passage between two spaces. Let me show your audience that as a refresher, if you will allow me to. And I'll just go back to that video of that. Let me just take them back to that so that it can be fresh in our minds. As we examine that space, Let me pull the video up here. Here it comes. So I want, if you remember this, you've descended down the ladder, and this is where the children's burial space is right here that we discovered. This area here was where those children were buried, just to the left hand side of the chute. They're in a deprecon that comes out of the a passage. Whoop, sorry, nope, I lost it. Go back.
It's fine.
It's touchscreen.
Yeah.
We can watch this beautiful thing again.
No worries.
This is where the burial of the children were, and the tool-shaped rock in the hand of the child.
In the hill antechamber, yes.
The hill antechamber. As you move, as you can imagine, I was in this space and was describing this space, and then I began my movement towards the Dinaletti chamber. And looking at this passage, which is very door-like, you should pay attention to this wall right here, and this column. You see the column? It's on your left, and you can see this very passage-like entrance. As I stared at that, doorway-like passage, I looked to the left of it, and saw something remarkable. Here are some images of me as I was looking. This is now in black light, and you'll see the sort of things that I'm looking at here, as I shine black light on it, you'll notice markings on the wall.
Markings, carvings.
And engravings that are across the wall in many, many places. I will now give you a better look at those. This is that doorway, our passage, and you can see the various etching, squares, triangles, X's, crosses,
non-geometric
figure on the area here. You are seeing engravings of Mileti origin. What they represent, we don't know. This is a non-geometric figure. You see the X that's been drawn in it, and the cross here, the upside down cross. It appears as if the surface has been modified. You see by hammering or something, this whole surface seems to be modified. The next image I show you is not Photoshop. The next image I show you is, and I'm warning you of that because what it's going to look like, I noticed that there appeared to be something altered about this surface.
Okay.
And I noticed that there was a discoloration you can probably pick up in this very white light. So by lowering the light and raising the contrast,
that's incredible. Oh my God. Did they use ochre?
We're not sure what this is yet. We will know what it is in the near future, but
haven't
touched it, but it has been
I've seen ochre paint in Malta at the Hypogeum. The Halsaflini Hypogeum, it is very similar. At least, like, I've only seen red ochre, so I've not seen yellow.
Yeah, there is a reddish substance.
Yeah.
And then there is a lighter substance that seems to be used. You see how they've used this natural line and then extended beyond it and this adjust the surface. So if you also on the remainder of the surface, it appears that they had sanded the surface using cave sediment, and then covered older scratches and markings to highlight the more recent ones.
This is incredible.
And this, I'll go back once. So let me just come off of that. So this discovery was made. I actually hallucinated when I saw these discoveries.
Of course.
It was very strange because, and it's not easy for me to admit this, but as I stared at them, the images floated off of the surface when I turned my black light on. And, you know, you've got to remember, I was probably in a physiological state very close to where a trance dancer gets, you know, where I'm exhausted. I've done a near-death experience coming in. My blood levels were probably off the charts. Yeah. I've been hyperventilating because I've been, you know, in a confined space. And I then see these images and then I alter the light source to a non-natural UV light. And boom, yeah. They floated into space in front of me. I've never had an experience like that before. It's just a very interesting part of that. I went on and narrated for the next 3 hours my journey through the cave. In that process, discovered fire and other things, evidence for fire. And on the way out, as I was getting ready to leave, as I was journeying down that passage, I lowered myself to the level of Naledi. So I got down even lower than I would normally move through the space, trying to look at their head height. And as I came to the end of the passage, on that column where these are on the other side, I discovered this. And if you look on the right-hand side, you'll see the engravings that are on the back of that column. You'll see me hold up a tool to them.
Yeah. There. So you can like show the size.
Yeah, you can see they're large.
Yeah.
It's a hashtag. Huh.
Incredible.
And you can see where there were older engravings behind it. It crosses over a stromatolite. Do you see the stromatolite, the fossil stromatolite in the wall here? You see how the edges cross over it? There were older etches which appear to have been covered with something like cave earth or something like that as they left this last image.
Oh yeah, they're clear markings.
And you can see the carving there. You can even see the order of the carving. This line, then this line. See the crosses that were done here, this line, then this line. Yeah. You can see how they struggled over the stromatolite.
Yeah.
You got to remember, this is 2.9 billion year old dolomite. This has a hardness scale between 4 and 5. This is not easy stuff to carve into. Those are the non-natural carvings on that surface.
So many.
And you can
it's not just one or two.
No, and you can also see where it looks like they modified the surface. You see where it looks like it's been pounded?
Yeah.
So that it was smoothed. That's the image I saw floating off the wall. This was the last image that was made there. So it's the most prominent one that we see.
Yeah.
Just to show you what a natural dolomite looks like.
Yeah.
This is the carved surface. There's the top of the hashtag.
Yeah.
Have you seen that before?
No.
Never seen anything like this. That before?
I don't think I've seen anything like this. I've not been like researching for as long as you have, of course.
That's from Gorham's Cave in Gibraltar. A Neanderthal did that 60,000 years ago.
That's eerily similar. Like even the fact that the straight lines have a diagonal line above it. Because it's not straight. They both have that.
Even with the cross on the lateral side.
Yeah. Wow. I had not seen that image from Gibraltar before.
You remember this?
Yeah, that's the stone tool.
The tool-shaped rock.
Yeah, the tool-shaped rock. It's not stone tool.
In the
tool,
hand of a Homo naledi child.
But it's very thin, that rock that we found with the hand. It's very thin, so it definitely could have been used to make those markings.
You recognize this?
That's ochre. Red ochre.
And that's from Blombosk Cave. 78,000 years ago. Thought to be done by the first art done by a Homo sapien. You see the hashtag?
Oh my god.
On the left, found in the hand of a Homo naledi chop. Directly below, the art engraved on the wall. That's thought to be evidence of the oldest art.
Oh yeah, but like that's gonna change. That has eerily to change.
Eerily similar, isn't it?
Even in shape, they're eerily similar. It's not precise, but it's even in the shape of it, both stones are similar.
It is suggested. Back to this is that first panel I showed you.
Yeah.
Here's a square. Do you see the triangles?
Yeah.
That almost form A's?
Yeah.
See the X's that have been drawn? And the ladder-like structures, you see this?
I think I have seen that stone before.
This is ochre carved from Blombos. Again, about 78,000 years. See the look at
triangles,
this area here,
the A shapes
with the lines that loop upward.
Yeah,
see the X's. Remarkable, huh?
That's incredible. That's extremely unexpected.
And just to let your audience enjoy it, this is what that would have looked like in firelight, the hashtag.
I mean, I would hallucinate if I was there with that firelight, with these markings.
Notice how the native rock doesn't animate.
Yeah.
Only the carvings. You can see the non-natural carvings now very, very clearly, how sharp they are, how deep they are.
I'm a bit astounded at this point, like... lost the words.
So,
that's incredible.
Welcome to the first evidence of non-human.
I think you can call it
symbols.
Yeah, but like it's a form of artistic expression that we definitely didn't expect from a small-brained individual.
What's the definition of art?
This is incredible. And from such a small-brained species, this is like extremely unexpected when you look at what we previously had thought about the big brains, the small brains. They're changing the entire narrative of how we should look at ancient species with this. I'm stunned. I don't even know what to say at this point. Like, I just saw Homo naledi carvings. I did not expect that at all. Like, I knew you like suggest you were hinting at like culture a little bit, but I did not expect this.
I don't think any one of us could have.
Exactly. Like, and in the firelight, the way that the light shifts over the carvings and that like nearly sort of seems to change the shape of it. And it makes it like entirely 3D and it's moving. And like I've heard a lot about that we need to look at carvings and cave art in the light of fire instead of with our light bulbs, because they were only able to see it in the light of fire that flickers, that's not constant, that comes from different directions and makes shapes in itself already with the shadows. So the fact that you had that rendering of it being in fire, that's incredible.
And we know they had fire.
We know they had fire. Like, and even with the people in my comment section on the discovery video of that, the fact that they had fire and the fact that no stone tools were found inside at that point in time. That's very important, of course. There were people that were saying, like, you don't necessarily need stone to create fire. You can use wood, and there would be no remnants of that going back as far as Homo Naledi. So who's to say they didn't make fire with wood, for instance?
I think one of the beauties of that space is I really do believe that we effectively have found a space effectively untouched by humans, and therefore I think we will eventually find how they made fire.
Yeah.
And no, I do believe they were making fire. They weren't just transporting fire. You don't build small fires deep in caves if you don't know how to make it.
Yeah. It's not like you can just grab a torch and climb all the way down to certain caves without that torch being done burning or, you know.
And I know that we now have discovered in the spaces where every turn of passages, wherever passages intersect and there's a chance of being lost, they built a hearth there.
Yeah, because you have to find your way back.
You would. Yeah. They probably left a child there tipping.
Because this goes back to like the first video that I made where I did indeed mention that there was a possibility that they had fire because you can't navigate a cave system this deep, this far down, without light. And there was no other light source. And then, of course, I got comments, well, they might have used insects or whatever. Like, it's a cute thought, but it's not necessarily plausible as much as fire. Because you catch an insect and then what? It's not giving you enough light, first of all.
You can now see why we... our team doesn't lack confidence.
It didn't, yeah.
We had this in hand.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, it's not
I also
much of a problem.
I also thought about like when I made the video about the fire discovery, I of course mentioned the fact that some people in the field weren't pleased with the announcement of it before the official publication. And that because of that, some of them are skeptical. And it's very controversial of you to do so. But at the same time, I felt like you were not going to announce this before the official publication if you weren't 150% certain.
It's absolutely. And you know, that we had long discussions about that. You can now probably understand why we released fire.
Yeah.
Because the fire is a brand new discovery, but it has ramifications for all of this. These are far more important discoveries than fire. And in hindsight, the fire was, it's manifest. And, you know, we also as a team, I think are beginning to grow dissatisfied with the idea of preprints in our field. We feel preprints are being misused. Preprints work very well in the hard physical sciences, where it's just data and you just release it. The problem in our field is people were beginning to release preprints as if they are scientific papers. And they're not. They're on the journey towards scientific papers and understanding. And I find them very misleading, even for journalists and things like that. Yeah. And so we decided as a team, and we took this at a very high level across the whole team, we had very clear evidence of fire. It's pertinent to all of these other arguments, and we didn't want colleagues making fools of themselves. It wouldn't be fair knowing what we had discovered at the same time.
Yeah.
And so, which, and the fire is a thing that one, you know, I think some people don't understand that sometimes science makes itself overly complex just to look like science.
Yeah.
And so our decision to release all of those images, I think your cat could identify that charcoal.
Yeah. Maybe not the small cat, maybe the bigger cat, you know, but yeah.
Right. So the idea of using a scientific lecture as the way to announce it is actually goes back to the traditions of the founding of science. That's how science used to be done.
Yeah.
And it was done very well for a very long time like that. You shared the evidence you had at hand, and then you let people look at it.
Yeah.
Yes, I know some people didn't like that, but we were dealing with several factors there. One, that why isn't that the same as a preprint?
Yeah.
We could have written it up in a paper and released it, and it looked like, wouldn't look that much different than a bunch of pictures of the thing. There's not a lot of chemistry you do with the charcoal and things like that. So we made that decision knowing that we didn't want colleagues out there when this was coming, which is all being done very traditional scientific way, you know. But we didn't want people embarrassing themselves by, you know, oh, well, they couldn't have done it because there's no fire. There's fire everywhere.
Yeah, okay? Exactly.
And, you know, and look at it. So I actually thought the feedback was very good from that fire event.
I think
it was very constructive.
The majority.
It accomplished what I wanted to accomplish, and that is, and my team did. People are aware there is evidence of fire. We may never be able to associate that directly with Homo naledi to the satisfaction of people who don't want it to be.
Yeah.
That's the nature of the discourse.
Yeah, you know, of course. You will always have people that remain skeptical or have their own beliefs.
Well, there were commentators when we announced Homo naledi and deliberate body disposal. You might remember in the initial commentary in Science, one colleague said, well, we need to know if they're younger than 350,000 years, because if they were, then Homo sapiens might have put them there.
Yeah, I've read about that.
And I kind of viewed that as the height of human arrogance.
Yeah.
Because let me rephrase that in a less polite way. What they're saying is, okay, we believe you've presented enough evidence that it is a sign of a mortuary or funerary practice, but we won't accept that a small-brained hominid could have done it. Therefore, if you date it to a date where Homo sapiens are certainly around there, we'll accept that it's a form of pet cemetery. Now, is that not?
It is indeed.
That's the problem of human arrogance. The idea that the evidence is enough for the behavior, but you are so hung on the idea that there's some special thing, there's some human superiority that you exclude that other species may have been equally complex. And my answer now is, look up.
Yeah, exactly. Look up. No, it is exactly how you say it is. It's the height of human arrogance. It's also the human arrogance with certain people has sort of kept us in this bubble of belief, of history, like in a whole. As the entirety of history is usually perceived in a bubble, because thinking outside of the box is scary. And of course we have like people that are making extraordinary claims that are founded on nothing, no evidence. I know, I'm working on like the Ancient Apocalypse series from Graham Hancock that I'm reviewing. And I've done more fun things in my life, absolutely. It's not fun having to pause it every minute or so, but it's the height of human arrogance that has kept us in this space that we just don't want to see beyond.
Well, that we didn't see even things like this. Watch what happens as this announcement races around the world that we have this. You're going to watch the people who go, that's impossible. That can't be. I have some of those in my... Oh.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. Yep. But for me, it's also evident of the historical evolutionary timeline, that we have a species that is small-brained, that buried their dead purposefully, that had a rock that could have been a stone tool, and they created carvings on a wall that they painted. We don't know exactly what kind of substance they used to paint it. I'm guessing it's ochre, because usually around that time they used ochre, and ochre is very much...
Not around that time, but later.
Almost. later, but like, we also have evidence of ochre use. I think it was 250,000 years ago.
Yeah, close to it.
Yeah, so it's not that far off.
And you've got the Homo erectus carvings on a mollusk shells. And,
yeah.
You know, this... what I hope is, as astounding as this is, that in 10 years, it'll be like, of course we knew that.
Yeah.
Of course we knew they were complex. They're all complex, because I suspect, you know, but this is it's a big moment, I think, for science, in the sense that it truly does. We have found another culture.
Yeah.
We have found a non-human culture.
Yeah.
And that presents, that's why I've begun using that word a lot. This is, there's enough here. It's space utilization. It is. It's got it all. Fire, yeah. Burial, the bodies, differential treatment of the dead. We've got different ways of mortuary practice being done. We have meaning-making symbols being placed upon obvious passages of movement. I mean, you know, when I first looked at that, I said doorway.
Yeah,
and I'm an archaeologist. So what do you do when you see a doorway? You look for symbols above it. And on it.
Yeah. You even found like animal bones. So even like whether they were, I don't know, burnt ritualistically or eaten, we don't know.
That's why you hear us being very cautious as a team, saying we're not saying cooking.
Exactly.
We don't have any evidence of them eating that stuff yet.
Exactly. But you have evidence of burnt animal bones.
There are spiral fractures on some of the antelope bones, which does imply they were accessing marrow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there may be some implication. It's fascinating that we're not seeing gigantic lithic scatters with those hearts.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And I think points to the differences between Naledi culture and human culture of the same periods.
Yeah.
You would not see a human heart that is not littered with lithic fragments. We're messy.
Yeah, because that's the thing, like with the people that believe in like these ancient advanced civilizations, like my question is, where is their trash?
Yeah.
We leave trash everywhere. We've done it for millennia at this point, like where we create something, whether that's a hearth or a stone tool or a wooden tool or whatever, we leave trash in bulk.
And it is interesting that Naledi may not be, they're not doing a human culture. So why would we expect them to? It's interesting. They're proving that not to expect them to mirror us.
Exactly. Yeah, and they could have, like I said earlier, like they could have created the fire by the use of wood. So that already eliminates some stone tools and stone tool trash, like lithic trash.
They could be curating their tools in a different way. Their tools may be more precious to them.
Yeah.
They may be spending more time making them.
Yeah.
And they may be curating them in the way that only very recent humans have done. You know?
Yeah.
That's actually much more like contemporary human behavior.
Yeah.
We don't leave trash around our hearths because we use fire in a very different way than people did even 150, 200 years ago.
Absolutely.
500 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, our relationship with fire is different. And our relationship with our tools is different.
Yeah. Like we keep them close. Yeah, this is incredible. Like I'm stunned. I'm like actually a bit lost for words about that last bit of the carvings and like the color of it. Like, of course, when you're in that state of like nearly in an anxiety attack or whatever, like, you think, I mean, that's close to what you must have felt like down there. And you change the light and then you see that color.
And that they literally, I don't know if you've seen like Game of Thrones, not Game of Thrones, Queen's Gambit or anything like that.
Where, yeah.
You know, it was very similar to that. It was a very similar experience to that. Anyway, it is that. I know scientifically why it occurred. You know, you're right on the edge of that sort of physiological space.
Yeah. This is incredible. Thank you so much.